The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Matip heads from the angle and off the woodwork. And it's off the line by James. Twice, but was it with a hand? And it's a red card as well. So Chelsea's pain is doubled. The calmest man in the building. He delivers. 1-1.
So Liverpool reflect on a missed opportunity for all 3 points against 10-man Chelsea, but great quality on show and two sides that are surely going to be fighting it out for honours at the end of the season. What did we learn? Well, The Athletic's James Pearce and Liverpool writer Chris McLaughlin joined myself, Steve Hothersall, on the Red Agenda to sift through those main talking points and also have a look at that transfer window that hovers at the moment. James, let's start with the game itself. Some brilliant football in the first half. Game was scintillating. Atmosphere was as well. You could see both teams mean business.
Yeah. I think we saw enough, didn't we, on Saturday evening to know that, you know, both of those teams are going to be right in the mix for the biggest prizes this time around. I think it was a strange game, wasn't it? Because I thought, you know, Liverpool started really well and then seemed to suffer a bit, I think, you know, at falling behind. You know, that seemed to, you know, be a bit of a body blow to them, and they struggled to recover from that and could easily have become 2-0 with that chance that Mason Mount had. And then, you know, they needed that penalty just on the stroke of half time. They needed something just to go for them to get them back in it. And, you know, of course, at that point with the red card, you know, like most people, I expected Liverpool to kick on and win the game. And so when they didn't, you know, there was a bit almost like a mood of deflation afterwards, because, you know, you could see, you know, the contrasting reaction from the two sets of players. You know, Liverpool players looked like they'd lost and Chelsea looked like they'd won. It was certainly a better point in the end for Chelsea than it was for Liverpool. So, yeah, frustrating, because, you know, when you have that amount of ball and you've got an extra man for so long, you expect Liverpool to make it count. But yeah, all in all, you know, it's, you know, when you're coming up against the European champions and you're disappointed with a point, you know, that's that probably says a lot about expectation levels.
Chris, welcome to the pod. The intensity of the occasion was great, wasn't it?
It's just superb having the fans back in for starters for a game like that. I mean, the Burnley game last weekend was brilliant, you know, the sort of first game back with a full house. But to be playing Chelsea, one of our main rivals for the title, the European champions, as much as I hate saying that they are the champions of Europe, and the atmosphere was superb. The 5:30 kickoffs are always great. The noise at Anfield's much better. Once everybody's obviously got in with the current situation with the NFC passes. And it was a proper Premier League game between two really, really good teams who are both going to be fighting for this title.
Yeah, it almost felt like a title decider, didn't it? In a weird way, 3 games into the season, but it had everything that went around it, Chris, that made you feel that a lot rode on this.
Yeah, and for that to be the third game, and for, like James said, the sort of the different reactions from the players at full time, and that, you know, Liverpool clearly felt they missed an opportunity. You don't get to play for half a game against 10 men of a team of Chelsea's calibre that often. Although, that said, last season at Stamford Bridge around this time, last year they had a man sent off just before half time. Christensen got sent off, and we won that game 2-0. So I think maybe that'll be in the minds of the Liverpool players as well. At the same time, if you're a Chelsea player, you've had a man sent off, you played the second half at a full Anfield, you've had to make a sub as well, they lost N'Golo Kante at half-time. You'd be buzzing to get a 1-0 draw from that. They know they were in a game as well, and I didn't see too much between the two teams, to be honest. I thought they looked pretty evenly matched over the course of the first half. Chelsea probably had the best chance when Mason Mount put the ball wide over than the goal they scored from the corner. But I thought, you know, you're looking at two teams who are going to be competing with each other and with the two Manchester clubs for the big prize.
We'll go straight to the red card. You mentioned it, James. Reece James sent off, dismissed for deliberate handball. At the time, I have to say, I didn't understand the law. And obviously, there was such a melee going on. And I'm saying, what's he actually been sent off for? Now, obviously, the replay show the scoop of the arm, the right arm. Is that just the slight difference that was the convincing factor for the referee when he went over to the VAR monitor?
Yeah, 100%. Because I must admit, initially, I thought... You know, it's not going to be a red card on the basis that, you know, it diverted from his thigh to his arm. But then when you actually look at the replay, you know, he's made a concerted effort to swing his arm around a bit, which is probably, you know, I think it's a natural reaction in the heat of the, you know, of the of that particular moment. But yeah, under the letter of the law, Anthony Taylor had no other option. You know, whether you know, I saw various pundits saying it was ridiculously harsh and he should use common sense and all the rest of it, but you know, what, you can't have it both ways, can you? You can't, you know, you the rules are there to be enforced. Referees can't just choose as and when they decide to stick to them. So no, it was the right decision, as harsh as that probably seemed on Reece James at the time, because it wasn't one of those absolute clear cut ones where, you know, a defender's pulled off a save on the line to but it would, you know, it would have, but for that movement of his arm, it would have been a goal. I mean, you know, the ironic thing was, as much as the red card was kind of celebrated by, you know, the vast majority of those inside Anfield at the time, it actually, in hindsight, it probably hampered Liverpool rather than helped them, because, I mean, it certainly wrecked the game as a spectacle, because, you know, that opening 45 minutes was so, you know, intense, the tempo from both teams, so open, both teams had space to exploit. And, you know, I think it would have been really interesting to see what would have happened with 11 against 11, because, of course, you know, suddenly then, you know, through, quite rightly, Tuchel goes to, you know, it's a backs to the wall job. It's, you know, as Klopp said, it became, you know, 5-3-1, you know, everyone behind the ball apart from Lukaku. And, you know, despite having that extra man, it was actually very, very difficult for Liverpool to find any space to exploit. You know, certainly you were not going to be able to do anything on the counter-attack, because Chelsea were sat so deep. So yeah, you know, no excuses, because I still think when you've got a man extra for that long and you're as team as talented as Liverpool, you should be able to find a way. But yeah, it actually didn't particularly help them. It certainly didn't help the game in terms of a spectacle.
So much going on in that 2 minutes where the red was issued. You had Sadio Mane, I don't know whether you saw that, Chris. Initially, he was putting his arm around Reece James, and then the camera panned in on him, sort of showing those gleaming white teeth and sort of almost sort of mocking him off the pitch. Then you had, of course, Mendy coming face to face with Salah as he was about to take the penalty, which is something that, you know, I don't recall in recent times where a keeper's come that close, whether he was talking in his ear. I think one of the Chelsea players was scuffing the penalty spot as well.
Yeah, Rudiger. Yeah, there was a lot of gamesmanship, to be honest. And I think that's part of Chelsea's DNA a little bit. I think it comes from the manager. I remember when Thomas Tuchel was in charge of PSG and we played them sort of home and away in the Champions League. And there was a lot of theatrics and antics and Neymar dive. And then we had a weak referee in Paris. And his players sort of made the most of that. And I think when something goes against a team managed by him, and when you've got a captain like Azpilicueta who's sort of been there, done it, you've got, you know, wily campaigners in that side, they will try and gain an advantage by doing anything they can, whether that's trying to put off the penalty taker, trying to scuff the penalty spot. And even when the penalty goes in, Mendy then tries to boot the ball and boot Hendo in the same sort of motion and gets a yellow card. And you're thinking, wow, what an end to this half, what's going to happen next? And maybe the biggest disappointment was the half-time whistle went just after that, because the next 5 minutes, if that first half had still been going on, would have been really tasty.
Yeah, everyone's getting stuck into it at that point. Mo taking the penalty. Talk about Mr. Reliable, James. So he scored his last 14 Premier League penalties, and they're pretty much all convincing.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. When Liverpool do get penalties now, you just, you know, there's any doubt, is there? I don't think there's any, not any doubt in Mo Salah's mind that, you know, what the outcome's going to be. So he dispatched that so clinically. And I think Chris is absolutely spot on. It was, you know, not only did the red card, you know, wreck the game as a spectacle, but it was also the timing of it. It would have been really interesting if Tuchel hadn't had that half-time break immediately to calm his players down, because they had completely lost their heads. I think, you know, I don't know, for argument's sake, say there'd been a long stoppage earlier on in the game and then we still had 6 or 7 minutes left of the first half after the red card. You know, I could have seen Liverpool scoring again or another Chelsea player getting sent off, because you know, especially in that atmosphere, you know, I think, you know, that the timing actually probably did help Chelsea in terms of, because, you know, obviously Tuchel made the changes, didn't he, at half time, and it worked. You know, he did a very good job at stifling Liverpool in that second half.
Yeah, because let's face it, James, they've got the players to be able to do that. When you brought on Thiago Silva, you've got Kante, Kovacic, Jorginho. I mean, it's hard enough playing against 10 men who are sort of sitting deep, but then you look at the quality of those players as well, and that's why it turned into such a frustrating affair.
Yeah. I mean, the depth that Chelsea have got is pretty extraordinary when you think that, you know, they didn't even use Timo Werner, did they? And, you know, obviously, I think Pulisic is missing at the moment as well. So, you know, they've got an absolute array of options. And then, you know, when you see him being able to tweak it defensively and bring on someone of the calibre of Thiago Silva, and, you know, and obviously Kovacic, who, you know, actually could have won the game for Chelsea later on with that chance on the counter-attack when, you know, when Alisson denied him. So, yeah, you know, they you know, it's they are going to take some stop in this season, Chelsea. There's no doubt about that. You know, is, you know, it might not be very pleasant to mention them in such high esteem, but they are the European champions for a reason, and they're only going to be stronger this season with Lukaku leading the line. I actually thought Liverpool did a really good job on Lukaku. I thought Joel Matip had a bit of a crazy couple of minutes midway in the first half, I think it was, when you know, gave the ball away cheaply, and he could have. The ball actually dropped to him, didn't it? About 45, 50 yards out, Mendy miles out of his goal, and he could have gone for it. Ended up taking a couple of touches and giving it away stupidly and leaving Liverpool exposed. But I thought the second half, Matip was very good. You know, Van Dijk, absolutely peerless again. I think, you know, we talked about, you know, the opening weeks of the season have almost been like a gradual increasing the kind of, you know, the challenge for Van Dijk, from making his comeback at Norwich to then facing Burnley to then suddenly locking horns with Lukaku. And yeah, it probably helped Liverpool a little bit in terms of that challenge, the fact that Lukaku was so isolated second half, because, you know, Chelsea weren't able to get numbers up around him very often. But yeah, take nothing away from Matip and Van Dijk, because I thought, you know, that's been one of the real positives of the season so far, the fact that both of those players have not only come back from long-term injuries, but have got back to a high level so quickly. And there's a decent understanding between them. I just think, you know, Van Dijk makes whoever's next to him better. But I think especially that's true with Matip, because, you know, he is quite a quiet guy. I think he needs a dominant personality next to him. And there's certainly no one better than Virgil Van Dijk on that front.
Yeah, he's intriguing, isn't he? You sort of hope that injury-wise, he can just keep clear of it, because what, he's had 4 or 5 years, Chris, where it's not gone his way. If he can put up a proper run of games, and by that you're talking 15-plus together, then wow, I mean, you know, the two of them together certainly work.
It really does, and Liverpool have only lost one league game when they played together at centre-half, and that was the first time at Swansea. So since that game, which I think was about January 2018 in Virgil's first month at the club, when they played at centre-back together, and obviously they've not always played at centre-back together because of the injuries to Virgil and the injuries you just mentioned to Joel, Liverpool haven't lost. I think maybe the last time they lost was in Camp Nou to Barcelona in the first leg of the semi-final when they played together. And that says a lot, doesn't it? That when you've got that sort of heart of the defence, right, with Alisson behind you and Fabinho in front, let's be honest, because he makes a massive difference. Liverpool are pretty good at the back. You know, I think the way they handled Lukaku yesterday was really good, because they kept him out of the box. Even in the first half, when it was 11-11, outside of the box, he's not as much as a danger. It's when you, like we saw against Arsenal when Chelsea played Arsenal, they dropped off him a little bit. They let him sort of push them into the box. Liverpool maintained the line. They maintained the high line, stopped him from doing that. So Chelsea's biggest danger really was potentially players running in behind Liverpool off him, which is, you know, Mason Mount got the chance in the first half from that. And I think it's knowing your players. And someone like Virgil, who's, you know, massively experienced, he can match people physically, but he's also clever. He's also a leader, and he knows how to organise and run a back line, but also how to play against particular opponents. And I think we saw that yesterday against Lukaku, who didn't really get much of a sniff, did he? Maybe one sort of half chance on the turn in the second half that Matip was right on him and blocked. And other than that, he wasn't that much of a threat.
Talking to strikers, and we were talking before we started this pod, strikers who sometimes aren't that sort of prevalent throughout the entirety of the game, but can just pop up and score for you. That's Diogo Jota, isn't it, James? I mean, you know, in the last couple of games, he's been instrumental. He didn't start this game, but he is one of those players that actually sometimes he's not at the heart of everything that's going on, but he gets a big chance, and he got a great chance in this game. Unfortunately, his header was just over.
Yeah, I mean, he looked as likely as anyone, didn't he, to find a winner when Liverpool were pushing and pushing in that second half. I could understand not starting him because I think, you know, Firmino has got a very good record against Chelsea, and Klopp still does turn to him, I think, more often than not when the big games come along. You know, he loves Firmino dropping off into those pockets of space and linking play. But yeah, I did feel for Jota, considering, you know, to have scored in the opening two games and then get overlooked for Chelsea. But, he came on, he made an impact. I think the concern for me was, you know, when it was clear that, you know, after that initial onslaught at the start of the second half, when Chelsea had weathered that storm and the intensity levels had dropped and it was like, we're running out of ideas here. You know, some fresh legs are needed just to change things. And, you know, and of course, you know, you look at the attacking options that are left. And of course, you know, Minamino wasn't called upon, you know, not a minute of football for him so far this season. Of course, Divock Origi didn't even make the matchday squad again. So, you know, as good as Jota is, and he's an absolute class act, and he's proved himself to be an elite option, I still do think, as we come towards the end of the window, that is an area of concern for me. The fact that, you know, the Liverpool didn't have the kind of options that the Klopp felt he could throw on in that final 20 minutes, I think it said a lot. The fact that instead he turned to Thiago to replace Henderson and similarly, you know, to use your last sub to bring on Tsimikas in place of the Tyrone Robertson. To me, I think that said that especially in terms of the challenges ahead and such a long season, it does, that kind of lack of high caliber backup does worry me a bit.
Yeah, Jürgen's insisted a few times that actually he's happy with what he's got and nothing big is going to happen in the window, James. But I think we all feel at least another body is needed going forward.
Yeah, and I think, you know, actually, when you look at it, it's probably a much bigger priority than actually replacing Wijnaldum. Where, of course, you know, we've all talked and written a lot about that over the course of the summer. You know, Gini Wijnaldum played almost every minute of every game. You know, why haven't Liverpool replaced him? But actually, three games into the season, when you look at how Harvey Elliott has performed in that midfield, and, you know, there's no bigger show of faith than the fact that Klopp picked him ahead of Keita and ahead of Thiago on Saturday. But it is actually further forward where arguably he does have not only fewer options, but I'd say the drop off in quality is that much bigger because, you know, Jota, without a shadow of a doubt, has gate crashed that front three where, you know, and given Klopp a real dilemma. Jota isn't backup. Jota is, you know, an absolutely top level player who has proved to be a fantastic signing. But, you know, when you actually scratch beneath the surface below that, you know, the reality is there is a big drop off to Minamino and Origi, and, you know, obviously we're waiting at the moment to find out, you know, the extent of Firmino's injury. Didn't look great, the fact that he pulled up holding his hamstring. He's having a scan, you know, as we speak, I think. And then, you know, so that is a worry for me. And it's people talk about the Africa Cup of Nations in January. And I think, of course, that's a factor this season because you're facing being without Salah, Mane and Keita for a month. And you know, and all the way along, Liverpool have said, well, you know, you don't buy someone for a month. That's ridiculous. Like, you know, you're obviously 100% on board with that. You wouldn't, you know, that would make no financial or sporting sense at all. But I don't think Liverpool just need another attacker for that month of January. I think they just need another attacker full stop.
What do you think, Chris? Other teams have bolstered, Grealish to City, Ronaldo to United. Have Liverpool got enough in a season that is clearly going to get very busy? We've seen the Champions League dates introduced. Are you confident?
I would say, like every other Liverpool fan, Liverpool need another striker. They need a forward player. I don't know anybody who doesn't think that, to be honest. You look at Origi yesterday not even making the matchday squad. And to me, in a game where you've got 10 minutes to play against 10 men, there should be another forward who can come on and make a difference. Now, obviously, you'd have to use Jota earlier than he probably would have done, because of the injury to Firmino. But you've got nine subs now, so you want that other option on the bench. And for me, if Minamino's face doesn't fit there, if he doesn't think he's quite up to it, because he doesn't start him that regularly. He let him go on loan last season to Southampton when we weren't exactly flush with strikers. So that suggests to me that he's maybe not as confident that he can change a game compared to the other options. But then you must be more confident in him than Origi, because he's not even making the bench. So for me, it is an area that Liverpool do need to strengthen. And, you know, Liverpool fans probably look at the other clubs, and you look at Ronaldo going back to United, and you look at Lukaku going to Chelsea for big money, you look at Grealish adding more creativity to City, and they were trying to get Harry Kane. Don't forget, they might yet try and get another forward. You can get a little bit envious that, well, hang on, our rivals have got new attacking options. And let's be honest, there's nothing more exciting than seeing a new striker and a forward come to your club. They're the players that thrill supporters. You can be a little bit envious that, well, they're stronger than us now. They've got extra bodies in, quality players coming in, and we've not. I think it is a concern, and we won't know how much of a concern until we see how the season pans out if nobody comes in. But that said, the window's still open, the opportunity's there. It's just whether they've identified that player and they can get him, but they think they need him. And I don't know if they do think they need him.
Quiet window, James, or not?
Well, it's... I think at the moment it's quiet. I would still be amazed if Liverpool didn't have a few irons in the fire, because, you know, from the people I've spoken to, it's always been, well, you know, if there's a deal to be done before the window shuts that we believe is, you know, offers decent value for someone who is better than what we've already got, then they'll do it. So I wouldn't say there's no chance at this stage of another incoming, but clearly, you know, it is very quiet. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of who goes out the other way. You know, kind of one end of the scale, you've obviously got people like, you know, Loris Karius and Shea Ojo that they're looking to find new clubs for, and then, you know, probably in terms of higher value players, you know, what's going to happen with Origi? You know, it's... And I think that, you know, some big decisions for Liverpool to make in the next, you know, 48 hours as well, in terms of, you know, are they going to reduce some of their demands for these players and just get them, you know, off the wage bill, and consider even loans for players that all the way along they've said would only leave on a permanent basis, or, you know, are they going to actually keep them and try and get the best out of them? You know, of course, you know, I you know, personally, I think... I honestly thought Origi would leave Liverpool this summer, because it just felt at the end of last season like a parting of the ways would be best for everyone, and I still think that. But, you know, of course, it's not straightforward. When, you know, I wrote about Origi last week, because I thought, you know, there seems to be a little bit of an unfair kind of narrative I've seen on social media that his continued presence at Liverpool is somehow stopping them from bringing someone else in, and, you know, that's not right, because it's not like Origi has been turning down potential moves left, right and centre. He hasn't, you know, he will only have a decision to make if Liverpool accept an offer, and that, you know, I was told as of, what, 2 days ago that they haven't had anything even worth considering. So, some big decisions to be made there. Obviously, you know, Nat Phillips is another one that's gone very quiet in terms of someone who was, you know, so integral to Liverpool qualifying for the Champions League with his performances in, you know, the last few months of last season, and, you know, clearly with the personnel coming back fit at centre back, you know, I think we, you know, we all expected him to move on in this window. But, you know, I think it's a sign that, you know, despite some of the eye catching deals with, you know, that we've seen involving clubs who have a bottomless pit of cash, you know, for a lot of other clubs who actually have to live within their means, it's been a much more difficult window, and I think that has probably hampered Liverpool's efforts to offload players like Origi and players like Phillips, who, you know, probably at the start of the summer they would have been expecting, you know, bids of kind of £12 to £15 million for.
Going back to the game, and Andy Robertson started the game, but he didn't have the best of times. Chris, you know, we're talking about attacking options, and clearly Andy and Trent, they're just fundamental to how Liverpool attack. But the right-hand side seemed to work okay, but Andy and Sadio Mane seemed to have far more trials and tribulations in that Chelsea game.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think there's been a subtle difference on the right if you look at the opening games of the season, where Trent's not as wide. Harvey Elliott, one of the reasons I think he's playing is that he's sort of going wider than Trent, and Trent's coming inside. Perfect example against Burnley was the second goal. Van Dijk pings that ball out to the touchline, and normally it'd be Trent over there, wouldn't it, bringing it down on his chest. It was Harvey, and then he looks inside, and who's going through the centre? There's Trent in a different space to what we've been used to seeing him getting to. Flicks the ball to Mane, and he smacks it into the goal. So I think that they're trying something different tactically to get Trent on the ball a bit more and to sort of stop teams from nullifying his presence a little bit, because he is Liverpool's most creative player. He is the greatest source of assists, and you can't just keep doing the same thing if teams get used to it. You've got to try other stuff, and I think in the first three games with Elliot being capable of dropping into a wider position, because he is used to playing wide, you know, his natural position is the role that Mo Salah plays in, and allowing Trent to come through the middle a little bit more. Guessing the style of João Cancelo a little bit at Man City, maybe they've looked a little bit at how he gets into sort of more central areas. Not necessarily as central as he does at City, but he does have more of an influence on the play under Pep Guardiola rather than hugging the touchline. And that's helped with Elliot. Now, obviously, you can't necessarily do that on both sides of the pitch. So maybe part of the issue is that it looks like Liverpool have channeled the ball more to the right than the left. And maybe that has made it a little bit more difficult for Robbo and Sadio on that side to get in the game as much and to have that sort of understanding where they've not got the third man like Trent and Salah have with Elliot going out to that side. That said, I mean, you know, if Robert didn't have the best of games yesterday, it's a rarity, isn't it? Let's be honest. I mean, there's no other left back in the league I'd rather have there. And Kostas Tsimikas, it looks like we've got a really good deputy. Thought he was excellent against Norwich, played well against Burnley, assists in those games. And I think that the left hand side is not something I'm particularly concerned about. If, you know, sometimes you have an off day, and I just put it down to that, to be honest.
What did you lads make of Gary Lineker's tweet that Trent is the best passer in English football and he should be playing as he did as a kid in midfield because of that, because he can display his brilliance more there? So this is something that Gary Lineker tweeted out yesterday. I think as Liverpool fans, straight away you say, well, you lose all the assists, you lose his running, you lose the balance of the side. What do you lads make of that?
Firstly, I think he's wrong. I think Trent's got to stay at right back. Ultimately, if you move Trent from right back, who is playing at right back? I mean, obviously, Nico Williams is there, but isn't the same type of player really as Trent. I guess you've got Joe Gomez as third choice, unless you're going down to Conor Bradley in the under-23s. And you lose too much if you move Trent. And I think he can play in midfield, clearly. But I think the best way to get the most out of him for the assists, for the crosses, is to get him into those wider areas. But also, in this new sort of style of play that Liverpool are using, you've kind of got the best of both worlds if he can get inside a little bit more as well.
Yeah, you don't move him, D. James.
No chance. No. I think anyone who's watched Liverpool closely in the last, three or four years will know that so much of the makeup of this Klopp team is built around what you get from the fullbacks. It's not, I think it's such an outdated concept, the idea that, you know, you can't influence a game from right back as much as you could do from centre midfield. I think, you know, I always think back to that game when Liverpool hammered Leicester at the King Power. I think was it Boxing Day, I think it was, and like Trent was just like, you know, that was probably the perfect modern example of how a right back can absolutely, you know, dominate a game from that position. So yeah, I think it's just a bit of a, you know, it's not for me. I think Trent is so important to the team from where he operates at the moment. That is where he is the source of so many goals. And, you know, and the actual fact with him coming inside so often as he did yesterday, we probably actually missed a little bit of that with him. You know, could have maybe done with him being out on the touchline a bit more to whip in some of those balls that are sometimes absolutely impossible to defend, because as it was, you know, the quality from wide areas did let Liverpool down, I thought, on Saturday, especially in that second half when, you know, there was so little space to operate in. You were never going to, you know, see players bursting in behind. And you know, what we had probably a dozen corners, I think, as well. And just, you know, I just thought in general, it just wasn't quite up to the quality we've become, you know, we're almost spoilt with. And I think obviously Robertson has to be cut some slack because, you know, it was his first game of the season. I thought Klopp did the right thing throwing him back in, because as good as Tsimikas has been, he's still not at the same level as Robertson for me. But yeah, it won't be. I don't think it'll be too often this season where we're bemoaning the quality from wide areas.
Right, let's finish with some Harvey Elliott love. You did a brilliant piece last week, James, where you reunited Harvey with his youth team coach. We'll talk about that in a minute. Just being Harvey Elliott at the moment, Chris, must be sensational. Second Premier League start, picked ahead of all these lads, Thiago, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and his confidence. And as fans, I think when he gets the ball, you all think, something's going to happen here.
Yeah, I spoke to him before the Burnley game for the main interview in the Matchday programme, and he's absolutely buzzing. He's absolutely living the dream. And the real good thing is he believes he's ready to be playing for Liverpool at this age, in this team, at this level. He said to me he feels like he's come back from Blackburn like a man, like he's matured there for that season in the Championship, that he learned a lot there. He learned sort of like maybe more some of the harsh realities of playing at a lower level and having that sort of pressure on you to perform. And I think he's come back a much better player. I think he's more confident on the ball. He's doing his thing, if you know what I mean. He's got that pass in him, the little pass for Salah last weekend, the goal that was disallowed for offside. But also the pressing. I've not seen the stats from yesterday, but he was clearly the player who pressed the most against Burnley. 27 presses, second in the Liverpool team was Jota, and Trent was 16. So there's a massive difference there in terms of like the actual amount of pressing and energy he used up. And the fact that the manager's not only starting him, he's not taking him off. He's keeping him on. You know what I mean? He had Ox on the bench. He had Naby on the bench. He could have made that change instead of putting Tsimikas on for the last 10 minutes. But no, he clearly thinks in Ellis he's got a player who maybe can be that sort of missing creative midfield link that maybe Liverpool have lacked in a couple of years. Obviously, a lot of people used to get onto the fact that Wijnaldum didn't make a lot of assists, even though it wasn't necessarily always his role. Now, maybe Klopp's kind of looked at that and thought, well, since Coutinho went, have we really had a sort of little diminutive, creative midfield player who can just play a little ball through and link with Mo and link with Trent, like I've just spoke about? And he's clearly going to be a really good player. He's already a good player. And it's really intriguing to see how long he stays in the team for, because if he keeps playing as well as he has been, and obviously he makes some mistakes, he's only young, he's not perfect, but the manager's got faith in him. And if he keeps playing as well as he has been, he's going to be out of this place.
He's demonstrated, James, that he belongs in matches of this sort of magnitude. And again, a plug for your piece, because it's really worth reading. What made the man, what made Harvey Elliott become what he is, that he's made such an impact so soon?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think speaking to Harvey and his old youth coach at Fulham, Dan Thomas, I think what really shone through is that, you know, Dan has worked in youth development for many, many years. And he said, you know, talent will only take you so far. And, you know, you need to have that work ethic. You need to have that, you know, that humility, and you need to have the good family around you to keep your feet on the floor and not allow you to get carried away with any of the distractions that can come with being a young player trying to make his way at the top level of the game. And certainly Harvey Elliott ticks all those boxes. You know, and I think, you know, spending time with him was great in terms of just realising just how much he is living the dream. You know, this is a kid that, you know, went to his first Champions League game at Anfield when he was 3 years of age and was on the cop with his dad, Scott. I mean, you know, you become quite cynical, don't you, I think, in modern football when players talk about, you know, this is my dream and I've always wanted to play here. But, you know, he's got the photos and the backstory to prove, you know, how much Liverpool Football Club always meant to him. You know, I remember writing, you know, not long after he signed about, you know, how many top clubs were after him. And the family were on holiday in Portugal at the time when they heard that Liverpool wanted him. And, you know, they'd had a tour of the Bernabeu, and Real Madrid were very keen. But once it became clear that Liverpool, you know, Harvey's team, and the club of his dad, Scott, who he'd supported all his life, you know, that there was no decision to be made. That was what he wanted. I think it says a lot, the fact that, you know, he could have had a long break this summer after his loan at Blackburn, but he didn't. You know, he didn't go away on holiday. He didn't. You know, he had a couple of weeks to rest up, and then was back in the gym, was back out running. You know, lost some weight, came back leaner and stronger, and determined to make his mark. And yeah, I must admit, I was really surprised that he, as well as he played against Burnley, I thought Klopp would opt for the greater experience of Keita or Thiago for a game of that magnitude. But I think it just shows, you know, how impressive he has been on the training field. We know that's where Klopp makes his decisions, and Klopp has that unwavering faith in him. And I think, you know, as much as you want, we all love the buzz that comes with making new signings and all the rest of it. But I think what Harvey Elliott has done in the last few weeks as well also underlines the importance of making sure that there is a pathway there for your best young players. Because, you know, I think Klopp was asked about it on Friday again, you know, not replacing Wijnaldum. And he said, well, the reality is if Gini had stayed here, then Harvey Elliott, you know, probably wouldn't have played, you know, so far this season. So he's been arguably the biggest positive. You know, Liverpool have taken 7 points out of a 9. Could have been better, probably should have been. But, you know, alongside, you know, the Van Dijk Matip axis, I think the emergence of Harvey Elliott and seeing that not only has he got the talent, but the temperament and the tactical nous to play in the biggest games has been a huge positive so far.
Long way for him to go. Can't wait to watch more of it. Can't believe, Chris, it's an international break now. We get this every year, don't we? It's just horrendous, isn't it?
Steve, you do me head in. I mean, I just sort of like, you know, get rid of qualifying and all that and just like say, oh, yeah, we know you know England are going to make it. You know Italy are going to make it. You know France and Brazil are making it. Just go and play in the summer, lads. They always come at a time and you just get into the season, don't they? And we've now got to wait. That said, when it starts up again, Leeds away followed by AC Milan at home. I mean, wow, what a start. Lads, we're right into it then, aren't we?
Right, boys, absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us on the Red Agenda. Chris, always wonderful to have you on. Chris McLaughlin, Liverpool writer. James, I'm sure you'll be all over anything happening Liverpool-wise in the transfer window this week. Fingers crossed. And, of course, there's some great stuff on The Athletic looking back at the game between Liverpool and Chelsea at the weekend. Red Agenda Extra will be with you later in the week. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you then.